This is Scott.
This is Pat.
I tell you, we got a great program coming up for you today at Hanson McLean's Money Matters. The Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, is their job to make sure that we don't harm ourselves or to make sure we don't get scammed? We'll talk a little bit about that and some things they're policing. We're going to look at Amazon, their stock, with the ride that it's been the last 20 years. And if you're a school teacher, retired school teacher, or work for a nonprofit, you might be sold some products that you need to be aware of. You want to hear this conversation. Just stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Answering your top financial questions with a little humor and a lot of fun. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are here with us as we take time to talk about financial matters and help you make some wise choices with your finances and your retirement. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays working with people like yourself, and we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. So whether you're listening to us on a Saturday or Sunday broadcast throughout a number of one of the stations that we are on, or you're listening to our podcast, we are glad you are here today.
And you can call us at 888-2-HANSON if you'd like to be on the show, 888-242-6766.
And we can take your call regarding maybe it's an issue you're trying to deal with, figuring out if it's the right thing, something's the right thing for you, or maybe someone's trying to pitch you some sort of product and trying to figure out what that is. Any
financial. How should we say? And the big question we're getting right now is, I've had it in the last 6 weeks. We've talked to a number of advisors here at Hanson McLean. We've had so many questions about my son just graduated, my daughter just graduated, and what should they do with X, Y, or Z?
Yeah. Well, at least that's what's on your mind, because that's where you've got your third kid now going to go to college this fall.
But more of our clients have been asking those questions.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
Yeah.
If you'd like to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, simply call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're going to talk with Alan. Alan, you're with Hanson McLean.
Haven't talked to you in a while, guys. I'm the guy that did work for the state's deferred comp, so I got out happily. So my question is, I've been doing a lot of research on this. I know you're kind of negative usually on these, but This is my fun money, okay?
Okay.
You call it gambling. It's not. It's structured. So I won't name the product. There are a few people that offer it, but it's a levered ETF, and you can get any commodity of your choice: hot fudge, gold, okay, silver, copper,
butter,
anything,
and
right?
Bacon is my favorite.
Butter and bacon, maple syrup, whatever. Yes, you're right. Virtually they have it all. And my concern is, first of all, is there's two ways to go about it. Everything I've read on the net, you can either accept this leverage, and there's we won't get too technical with beta slippage and get the audience all freaked out, so let's not do that. Let's just say that there's not the exact correlation of, let's say, if that fund went up 15% in a day, you may not realize the true 15% for a variety of reasons.
Okay.
Conversely down, you can also possibly lose the money depending on what the underlying asset and the derivatives, you know, that word, they look for cash cover derivatives to cover the fund, right? Okay.
Yep.
So my question is, so the experts on the site that I look at for this one commodity I like say, you know, there's two approaches. You can use these funds, but they're very volatile and they're a little dangerous, or you can just pick the underlying asset. Let's just use gold as an example.
And do options
and buy
on
one
it.
Of the gold ETFs.
Or
and
an ETF.
No options on it. That's what I wanted to ask
right?
you.
It, do the, it does the
you,
same.
If you were doing it.
It does the same thing, right? So I actually knew where you were going to go with this. You can buy that levered ETF, or you could just do options on it. Options on the underlying commodity. So that you're gonna get to the same place.
ETF gold fund. Okay, you are. So you're saying the risk. I mean, I know I've done options before. I thank God I've never lost. You know, where the option expired was worthless, because you lose the entire investment.
Yeah. Right? So here
in the.
So here's kind of, so
yeah, let's
step back for so what you're talking about a commodity. Let's go back to, let's call it pork futures. We've all heard that, whether you're an investor,
okay,
right? What the heck is pork?
Right.
So if you think about,
made famous by Eddie Murphy in the movie Trading
but
Places.
But if you're a pork farmer, right, and you know that every year you've got your own fixed expenses at the farm. It's going to cost you X dollars to run the farm. You've got payroll. You've got feed. You got all these things.
And the only thing you don't know is what the pork's going to sell for
end
of the year.
Because some years it's a high price. Some years it's a low price. So you think, doggone it, I can't take this risk. So you think, how can I get rid of this risk? And that's how futures markets and these commodity markets developed in the first place. So the pork farmer says, man, I'm going to sell my pork today, even though I'm not going to deliver it for another 9 months from now, or what? I don't really know anything about the pork futures market, but this is how it works. So the farmer says, I'm going to sell my pork today. Well, I'm going to agree upon a price today that I'm going to deliver 9 months from now. So from the pork farmer's perspective, what he or she has done, I think mostly he's, I don't know how many women are in pork farming business.
Or large corporations,
It's a risk mitigation tool. It's a way to reduce the risk. The person on the other side is taking, like yourself, would be taking a speculative bet. But now, sometimes there's two parties. They both are shifting risk, and it works beautifully. Something like this you're talking about, you are just willing to be a speculator.
But Scott, he's called our show before, and he works for CalPERS in the deferred compensation, if I remember correct. Is that right? Alan?
Well, not CalPERS. Thankfully, not CalPERS. I can say I'm not ashamed. No, that program's run by what was called the Department of Personnel Administration, no longer. Right. So, but I did sit on and do some analysis for the director who sits on that board.
Okay.
Yeah, so you and you got I you got that commodity right. But now think of this. So if you buy a gold ETF, which is really the underlying, and I'm not buying gold. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. I'm buying gold miners. So the guys that are and the women that are in there down in Chile or Colombia or wherever, Canada and everything, they're buying the gold, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I have two choices. I could buy a basket full of stocks, diversify that, and then do options on that. Or I can buy the ETF itself, and I can add, with some people, leverage on top of that, 2X or 3X leverage to enhance the return.
Correct.
And, of course, the risk. I understand that. So I think I've heard you right say, Alan, you could do either one. You know, you could either do ahead and buy the companies themselves and then go ahead and take the risk of doing the options.
Correct.
And, you know, pray that your assumptions are right. Or
Correct.
You can just buy these. And the nice thing I like about this is that I think of it as being more liquid than the option. The option, I guess, is liquid. I can still sell it at a point if I can find a buyer, whereas this levered ETF, I mean, I can sell it in moments in time in a day.
So you are 100% correct, and the levered ETF will probably be less expensive in the long term.
But they operate the same market, so when you go to sell,
understand.
If there's some price dislocations in the marketplace because something's haywire for a period of time, which can happen, particularly the more esoteric something gets, you can still have...
Most certainly, but there's going to be less friction in the ETF market than I think for an individual at your level.
What
than
percentage
an option.
Of your portfolio are you considering doing in something like this?
Well, not all of it. That's for sure.
Like 10%, 10%.
Oh, let's see. A little higher than that. Probably 15%. Right. I mean, let's put it this way: in the last 6 months. You know, you have the glory stories and the horror stories. Mm-hmm. I could have been up 40-45% at a time, or I could have been down 50% at a time. I mean, I literally was.
Uh-huh.
45 down 50. Because the problem is, you got to exit out and recalculate your assumptions about that market.
Yeah,
in this case, is gold.
Mm-hmm.
And gold went
just remember,
if our beloved president is, you know, who's trying to do well, but if he's a goofball or the North Koreans are goofballs, then that one asset class is a mind blowing protection in relationship to any other asset classes I can see around.
Just remember when you're in the options market, who you're competing against.
Yeah, I know, right.
Right.
I got the big boys, big girls.
So, I mean, you think of some of the big investment banks, they take the top graduates from some of these business schools, and they got the team of, the Russian quants with their algorithms, and those are some of the people you're competing against.
Yeah, but so the answer to your question...
It's a tough market.
Alan, the answer to your question is, I wouldn't do it at all, but if I was to do it, I'd use the ETFs.
Yes, I would too.
Okay.
All righty.
Very good.
All right,
appreciate
Alan.
The call.
Good luck.
Bye.
See
bye.
So that's an interesting call. He's called our show a few times before. I remember him.
Yes.
He's very, very, very sophisticated.
Yeah. Obviously understands these markets.
Yes, correct. And understood the risk going into this. If you actually understood, if you're listening now and you understood any part of that conversation.
That's why I went to the pork belly futures.
So I know. Great explanation.
That's a derivative, essentially. You don't hear the word derivatives talked as much
or
as we did.
Or options.
Yeah.
I was actually trying to explain put options to my 16-year-old the other day. I don't think I did a very good job.
They wanted to listen to that much?
Yeah, he sat through the conversation. He asked the question, though. I don't remember why it came up, but he asked if you could bet that a company was going poorly.
Oh,
that's
you
what
bet
he was
you can.
Betting. And so I actually explained.
Here's the ways we can do it, son. We can sell a short or we can use options.
And then he said, do we have any more Cheez-Its?
Yeah, Cheez-Its. I'm hungry. You know, since you Pat, this call reminded me, there's this article that came out. Quadruple levered ETF.
So that means that it moves four times the speed, four times in any direction.
Yeah, quadruple levered.
Yeah. So it means they use leverage, but it's not going to move necessarily four times. It's just they use a lot of leverage in order to get it there. Or options.
Yeah. Well, it won't be quite four times because there's the cost, right?
Yes,
because
correct.
All the financial costs that go in.
Associated with that.
But the SEC said that they put a pause in its approval of it.
Why?
Well, that's what we were talking earlier in the week. Said something about, at what point is it the Securities Exchange Commission's job to keep investors safe from themselves?
They're not doing anything illegal, right? So let's explain what this ETF four times means.
Exchange traded fund. It's an index fund.
Okay.
Four times leverage means for every dollar you put in, they go and essentially they're using contracts, but they would like they're borrowing another $3. So you've got four times.
So yeah,
the return. So if they, theoretically,
if the point move, if the underlying index moves by one point, then your portfolio will move by almost four.
Yeah. Right now there are 273 leveraged inverse exchange traded products in the market.
So inverse means if the market goes up, your portfolio goes down and vice versa.
Or leveraged inverse. Yeah. So this one company was looking at, they wanted both a long, which means you're betting for the market to go up, quadruple leverage, and another one of a short one.
And the Securities
quadruple.
Exchange Commission and
like, I don't know if we like this. And first of all, I think you'd be a fool to invest your money in it because nobody can predict where the market's going to go.
Okay.
Over any length of time.
No, but I could see a reason for it. I'll give you a reason for it.
You want to hedge your portfolio and you just the low cost way to do it.
That's
but
exactly
it. Actually, it's probably expensive when you actually. When you drilled into what are the cost of putting this together.
But if you wanted to do a quick and easy, let's say you had...
All right.
Let's say that you had...
Yeah, $1 million in the S&P 500.
Okay, and...
And you're worried...
And your tax gain in there is monumental.
Okay.
Let's just say that you got bought it in 1940, the S&P 500.
1940.
I don't even know if the S&P 500
the
was
Vanguard,
around.
The first Vanguard fund. You were okay. John Bogle's first client.
John,
1974.
John and you...
Four.
Drinking coffee together.
Yes.
Pontificating.
Yes.
You buy it, and now you've got all these gains in it, right? And you want to protect that, so you buy something on the inverse of it.
Yeah, because you either go out and buy your own options, which can get complicated.
Or you just take...
Or you buy an ETF that'll do it for you.
That will do it for you, and you have to put a lot less capital down in order to do that. That's a reason you might want to do it. Or maybe you're
whether or not this fund would be the least expensive way. You've got a point there.
But so my point is it's not the SEC's job. What they're doing is not this fund is not illegal.
So you might buy the inverse quadruple leverage inverse as an insurance hedge. You say, you know what? I'm going to take a little bit of cash. I'm going to put it in here.
Or maybe.
I know it might go to zero, but if the market tanks, this is going to skyrocket and I'm going to make some money, which is going to offset my other losses.
Or maybe I'm just a big risk taker. Seriously, Maybe I'm just a big risk taker.
Well, then that's just foolishness with your money.
Well, that's the SEC doesn't get to decide what I get to do with my money.
I kind of agree with you.
The SEC's not.
You can go to Las Vegas.
What the SEC should be doing is they're making sure I'm not get ignorantly cheated. Being cheated. That's what they
scammed.
Right. Yes.
You're right. I think other than that, then why?
Yeah.
I think maybe I
and the fine people, the SEC, they're fine people. I've got to say that because they regulate us.
I actually think you've got might have a point. To join Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. Numeric, that's 1-888-242-6766. Let's talk to Terry. Terry, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello.
Hi, Terry.
Hello. I wonder, you said I have 59 and a half years old. You said I a minimum required, IMD, required minimum distribution from your account, like what?
And you,
account?
Yeah, Terry, and you said you're 59 and a half?
I'm 60 now, you know?
69. And how much?
I'm 60.
60. Okay. All right. So let's quickly, Scott, go over some of the rules of the IRA.
You know, it's so funny. And Terry, I appreciate the call here. So here's how the retirement accounts work. It's what's bizarre about this. In Congress, I don't know where these ages come from, but when we're under 59 and a half, because we all celebrate our half birthday, dreading the age 60 birthday. Let's party at age 59 and a half. At age 59 and a half, that's the first age that we have full access to all of our retirement accounts
for
without any potential premature penalties.
For all retirement accounts, even if you're employed.
Correct. 59 and a half.
59 and a half.
Go ahead, take whatever. Under that age, there's restrictions on most plans.
But not all, but
so
most.
So there's a couple loophole
there's
ways
55
around.
55 if it's a 401k or
you could take his it's money out of part of a 72T, series of equal payments.
If it's a deferred a compensation.
But for all intents and purposes, it's age 59 and a half. Then, at age 70 and a half, we're required to take distributions out. So essentially, we have what? 11 years of our life when you have total freedom with your retirement account, which is sometimes the best time to do some planning.
Oh, Roth conversions, most certainly.
At 70 and a half, we must start taking some distributions. And it's a crazy formula, but it's basically based upon your life expectancy and combined with somebody 10 years younger than yourself. It's based on an old joint life expectancy table. Long story of how we got there, but that's what it is. So at 70 and a half, we have to take out, it's about 4%.
Yeah,
let's call it 4%.
A little less, but about 4. Right,
3.5%. The next year, it's almost 4%. The next year, it's about 4%. Then it's 4.25%. And it slowly gets a little more the older you get. So by the time you're 80 and then 90, the required minimum distribution starts getting quite large.
So, Terry, how much money is in your IRA or retirement plan?
About 50,000.
Oh, 50,000. Okay. So your required minimum distribution is going to be about $2,000 at your age 70 and a half.
Yeah. And you must start taking distributions
by the April 1st following your 70 and a half birthday.
Yeah. So anyway,
easy to do. Yeah. And in fact, the IRA trustee will actually tell you how much you need to take. Easy.
So,
what you want to do is just set it up so they send you a check either on a monthly basis or annually, and they withhold taxes, and it's done.
Yeah. So, hey, appreciate the call, Terry. Now, Pat, question for you. Do you think this is one of these areas that we may see a change in this year?
No. And only because...
So what's your thought? So here we have new administration, Republic-controlled, both sides of the House, right? So...
Here's why I don't think they're going to make any changes in this.
Yeah.
No one's lobbying to change this, right? No one's lobbying to change this. There's no vested interest in how this is the outcome is going to play out. There's big vested interest in the DOL fiduciary standard rule with Department of Labor fiduciary standard rule that's supposed to go into play this year. So no... Congressman is...
no one spent any time saying, why do we have to take money? As a matter of fact...
At no time, more importantly, money.
The percentage of Americans that are burdened by their... And the burden, I use that in a strong... Because that means you have more money than you need for your daily expenses. That's why
it's quite the burden. It's not going to matter.
I don't know. You know, I actually think this is one of those things that can get slipped in a comprehensive overhaul. All it takes is one or two congressmen, some large donors behind them saying, hey, you know, this
let's make it easy. All right, I'll change
my mind. Let's push it to 75. People are living longer.
I just don't see it.
Well, we don't know.
But they certainly could simplify this stuff. Remember required minimum distributions, how complicated they were 20 years ago?
God.
It was a nightmare. They've simplified it significantly.
And that was the Treasury Department did that.
Yeah.
Congress.
Just because people couldn't follow the rules.
Nobody
they were too
could,
complicated.
Yeah. They're still kind of crazy.
They are actually.
There's
crazy.
Also talk of eliminating stretch IRA for beneficiaries.
Yeah.
I could see that happening.
Yeah, I could see that.
So it speed up revenue.
And it will change planning. People will treat their IRAs differently.
It would speed up the revenue. Because right now you'll allow a beneficiary to stretch on the tax deferral over their life expectancy.
Yeah, but if they change that, we will have to go back to our wealthier clients and actually change the strategy of how
they take the
distributions.
Yeah, there's no question about it. So anyway, we're taking calls. 1-888-2-HANSEN. That's 1-888-242-6766. And we're talking with Roy in Aurora, Colorado. Roy, you're with Hanson McClain.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
We had just taken some money out of my HSA.
Okay.
Out of my 401k, get that straight, to do some improvements to our home so we could get it refinanced. And then once the money... Basically, once the mortgage went through, we got enough money back where I was trying to decide between putting the money into paying off that loan or whether I should go in the direction of I'm coming up on 65 later on this year, and I won't be able to contribute to my HSA account anymore, and so I was trying to decide if I should try and build that up as much as I could this year.
Before, interesting. So you took a loan from your 401k to do some home improvements, then you refinanced the house. Now you're looking at whether you want to pay that loan back.
Well, yeah, because basically it's on sort of like have 5 years to pay.
How much did you borrow from the 401k?
$10,000.
Okay. So if you don't pay it back, what'll happen, Roy, is it'll be treated as a taxable withdrawal. So you're going to have let's say you just didn't pay it back, you'll have $10,000. Are you when do you plan on retiring?
And when I turn 70.
Okay, so you plan to continue to work.
So the answer.
So he's thinking about do we?
Do I take that $10,000 and put it in the HSA or the 401k? It's the same thing.
Well, no, because after age 65, Roy says he's not going to be able to contribute anymore to his health savings account.
That is correct. How much money are you contributing to your 401k now?
My 401k or my HSA?
Your 401k.
I think our company matches like 3%.
And how much are you putting in?
Ballpark. Well, it's matching, so I'm putting in 3% and they're matching.
So the answer to your question is...
I pay the loan off.
Pay the loan off. And the reason is that HSA is fine. They essentially do at your age. At your age, the 401k and the HSA do almost identical things.
Except for the tax structure. Except for the tax structure, because qualified medical expenses are tax-free, non-taxable.
I get that.
Okay.
So another way to look at this, would we recommend someone take a loan when they're 64 out of their 401k in order to front load a health savings account?
That was my point, because he paid taxes taking the money from the 401k in order to put it in there. That's why they wash each other, right?
I agree with Pat. That's right.
And so the reason
it'll be taxable
is because it will be taxable. And the reason you would use the 401k over the HSA is because the 401k actually probably has a lot better investment options and it's easier to manage than the HSA. Give me that.
Yeah. I'll get, yep.
So pay the 401k back.
Off.
And that is an about as obscure question as I've gotten.
I know.
In a long, long
That's
time.
That's a good one, though.
Pay back the 401k.
Pay it back. So anyway, appreciate the call, Roy. And we'll take a break here in a moment. But if you'd like to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to join us. Any question regarding your financial life, would love to entertain your call. 1-888-2-HANSEN. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, that number is 1-888-242-6766. And I'd love to take your call. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue on with Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-242-6766.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Thanks for sticking around with the program here today. So, you know, investing is not always easy. And because we have to be patient.
And patience
successful
is hard.
Investors have patience. I remember talking to someone said they never lost money in an investment, ever. They've never had their portfolio never declined. And I said, well, you never invested in anything. They were trying to argue with me. I'm like, to say you've never had anything that declined in value, that's ludicrous. My home certainly has declined in value at other periods of time.
Yeah.
Anything can decline in value at a period of time, except for bank CDs.
Yes.
That's hardly an investment. Maybe it's prudent to have a portion of your money there, but it's not investment. So Amazon turned 20 years old in this last month.
Well, happy birthday, Amazon.
Interesting. And of course, it's been a phenomenal stock that last 20 years. Matter of fact, it earned investors 155 times what they would have invested.
If they had bought on the initial public offering?
Yeah.
For over 20 years, that's pretty good.
Actually, no. 155 times what would have been made in the S&P 500.
That's really, really good.
But I bet the only one who still owns it from day one is Jeff Bezos, maybe a couple other people that are still there with the company from day one.
Probably, because it has been a long, long, rocky ride.
That company has gone all over the place. So while it's had a 36% annual return over that time, there's been these huge ups and downs. As an example, this stock has had a daily declines of 6% or more 199 times. Get this. The stock has fallen 15% over a three-day period, 107 different occasions.
So
you own this company, it falls 15%. If you're like a lot of investors who buy and sell stocks, one of those type of investors, 15%, you call your broker and you say, what the heck's going on?
That's pretty scary, 15%.
It's had 20% pullbacks in 16 of its 20 years. It's been a public company.
So
these are companies when the S&P is doing fine and it's down 20%
which
or
means
more.
That it's an extremely volatile stock.
And in almost half of those 16 years, the stock went down 40%.
So 8 out of the last 20 years,
the stock has declined 40%.
So this is not
further,
a widow and orphan stock.
It lost 95% of its value when the tech bubble burst December 99 through October 1st. I don't know too many people who could have withstand this fluctuations that the stock has had over
the volatility
all over the place.
Yeah. And it hasn't been the company hasn't been in a straight line in terms of its growth either.
Not at all.
You know, you talk about the stock price being all over the place. The growth has been all over the place and will continue to be all over the place because they grow. Listen, there is probably not, there are posters of my wife and my kids on the Amazon's corporate office.
Because you're such prolific shoppers.
They are. I use it all the time. I bought some shaving cream on Amazon earlier today. I would admit. I use it for the most.
I do too.
I use it for lawn products.
Because it's a simple app.
One click. I needed some stuff for the drip system in the sprinklers, and I just went to Amazon because I figured, it'll be here in 3 days. I bought a toaster on Amazon one time at 8 in the morning. It was delivered by 7 that evening. A toaster. The point being, It's a beautiful, incredible service.
I brought a child.
The ability for it to make money is a difficult prospect. And that is why...
No, it can make... Their growth is because they've plowed so much back into essentially R&D.
Yes.
Right?
They plow
it all back in. Every dime they've made, they plow back in from the day one. Look, we're going to take our earnings. We're going to plow back into some future growth. And they go into all kinds of crazy ideas.
Yeah, and most of them, not all of them, do work. They are one of the lead developers in autonomous...
Actually, I bet most don't work.
Delivery.
I bet most haven't worked.
Everything that gets thrown
that you
at.
See. Yeah.
Yeah, the stuff, like that, stuff that goes along that... By the time you see it on 60 Minutes, it's pretty well on its way.
You think? Yeah.
So, but...
And whether or not the point you like being, the idea about the point drones being is delivery. That
as an investor, it's okay to own something like Amazon. Just don't own too much of it. And if you own it, understand why you own it. But it's hard to own because it's all over the place.
Well, I certainly wouldn't be recommending buying it today.
No.
I mean, it is already priced in some huge... And if, by the way, frankly, if over the last... If roughly 8 of the last 20 years, it's fallen 40% during a year...
And you're paying $980 a share for it now?
Why don't you wait until another pullback
a little bit. Because it's inevitable. I don't know if it's inevitable.
Sometimes I ask myself, what has Amazon done as far as from an ecological standpoint, climate change, green, all that delivery, next day delivery, et cetera, trucks driving around delivering little boxes all the time.
Oh, I know. So instead
of driving it to a central system where they then sort it and then bring it out to the store, we drive to the store, get the product, drive home. Now...
Zero.
I don't know.
But we quit printing books because we read them on a printed format like Amazon.
I buy books still sometimes. About half.
Do you?
About half the time. A third of the time.
I don't.
Some I like an old school.
I don't. So, yeah, ecologically, I think we're not.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
I was just kind of curious. Uh-huh. But not many people can withstand that kind of
When there was all the hype around its birthday, I thought, you try owning it for that amount of time. Yeah, it's hard.
Well, if you own the S&P 500 fund, which probably a good portion of you do own it.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And what's always fascinating to see is, you know how many other companies there were that the stock went to zero over this time?
That had great prospects.
Yes.
Because seemingly great prospects.
If you look at, it's an interesting, because you look at how many people are going to indexing their portfolios. They're saying, look, the average active manager can't pick Amazon over the next.
No.
Right? So they pick Amazon. And I used to own a mutual fund, and I liked it. The thing I liked about it is their annual report, it would have their top 10 performers. It was top 10 or 5. It was top 5 best performers and their bottom 5 performers. Bottom 5 were, the top ones were things like this. Thing tripled, went, 8-fold in the year. The bottom 5 were... bankrupt because of this, bankrupt.
Why did
of
that, they why bankrupt. Did they publish that?
I think just
in full disclosure.
What I enjoyed about it, I said, you the same amount of research and due diligence went into picking those winners as went into picking those losers.
And the outcome, significantly different.
Significantly different.
But there's a lot of things that happen in businesses that quite frankly, it's the convergence of the right people at the right time. It's
no
hard
question.
To predict. Luck, regulatory environments, the cost of capital, the risk associated with the cost of capital.
But Jeff Bezos probably would have, if he didn't create Amazon, he probably would have created something else pretty significant.
Yeah.
Don't you think? Elon Musk, if he didn't
figure
out how to do the tax subsidies and electricity.
Well, he probably would have ended up doing something. I don't think they'd be working down at the local Wicks and Sticks.
What's a Wicks and Sticks?
Yeah, back at the mall where they had the candle place, Wicks and Sticks. Is that what it was called?
Wicks and Sticks? Next to the Scotch tape store?
No, Wicks and Sticks. Like, but when you're growing up, they had the you go to the old school mall, which, by the way, when I talk old school, the malls are on their way out. But when you had Wicks, candles, and Sticks was the incense. I'm dating myself. The Wicks and Sticks.
Yeah, I think I don't recall that.
The Yankee Candle Store.
I don't recall going into candles.
I don't think my point being is I don't think Jeff Bezos would be working in some sort of
You see, offline. If you make the candles in the sand.
I don't think Jeff Bezos would be working as some sort of offline
maybe not.
Retailer at the mall selling soap. That's just me. I think that he probably would have been doing something a little bit more creative.
I mean, a handsome McLean, we typically advocate that people are to invest in broad diversified portfolios. And by the way, diversification is not a strategy to get rich. It's a strategy to protect your standard of living.
That's
protect
right.
Your portfolio.
That is right. It is a diversified portfolio.
So if Jeff Bezos himself had a financial advisor who's every time his Amazon stock got to a certain percentage of his portfolio, told him to sell Amazon, Jeff Bezos would not be a very wealthy man today.
Yes.
He wouldn't be the billionaire that he is.
But if it had failed, he wouldn't be poor either.
Yes, but he might. So it's if you're owning one individual security, just always be, whatever that is, realize that that thing could blow apart on you.
There are risks in it.
And we've seen 20-some-odd years of doing this with individuals. We've seen companies that look phenomenal that have blown apart. And you think about something.
Enron, back at, MCI, WorldCom, Lucent Technologies.
I remember reading about Enron in one of the magazines. But it was such a great company on and on a couple years before it blew up, right?
Enron, Lucent.
Yeah, a lot of great companies. A
lot of great companies.
So if you own an individual stock, just make sure that you can afford to lose whatever you've got invested in there. So anyway, at Hanson McLean, it is time now for Real Advice. So our Real Advice segment is we've got a financial advisor of Hanson McLean joining us, and they'll tell about an experience they had with an individual or a couple that they've worked with here as part of their advisory role with Hanson McLean. And keep in mind that their story is unique. Their individual they worked with, while they might have had a great outcome, yours might not be the same. So keep that in mind. But we've got Pat Henry on joining us today. And Pat Henry is a certified financial planner. Pat joined Hanson McLean back in 2004. And he meets with clients primarily throughout the Sacramento region. Pat, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hey, thanks, guys. And Pat, I think you should kind of revisit that Wicks and Sticks thing. I think you should bring that back. Very amazing.
Pat, was there not a store called Wicks and Sticks when you were growing up?
I'm not that old, Pat. And I'm old.
You don't recall it?
I don't recall Wicks and Sticks.
I don't recall Wicks and Sticks. Oh, I don't know where your mom drug you,
Pat. In the candle area of the mall.
I love the smell.
You had there's four boys in your family, too. I can't imagine your mom taking all the Irish kids to the Wicks and Sticks with four boys.
Oh, no. My mom gave us bus money and told us to leave for the day.
You kidding?
Bus money. He was not driving us anywhere. Bring back a candle for my birthday. Now, get out. All right. But that's not why we're here, to reminisce over my somewhat challenged but nonetheless beautiful childhood. Pat, so tell us about your situation.
Yeah, this, so I have this great client now. She's a retired school teacher, and she came to us because when she retired, she had a 403B account, which is kind of the 401K for school districts, nonprofit organizations. And when she retired, she took that money out, rolled it over with an advisor who put it into three different annuity contracts. And so she came to us after a number of years just to kind of, she just didn't understand what she had. She wasn't real comfortable with the products that she owned. And so she wanted a second opinion.
And how much money was there? And why three different contracts?
Well, there was about a total of about $400,000. And the thing is, as I met with her and we kind of walked through her financial situation, her pension and what she had just in her pension was enough for her to live on. And when we dove into these contracts were all what are called guaranteed income benefit contracts, or GMIB contracts. So the advisor placed her in annuity products that are designed to provide income for someone, and she didn't need any income.
Was she taking income from?
No, she didn't. She just started taking required minimum distributions from the different contracts. So she didn't need the benefit. So what we did is
Pat, school teachers historically have been sold financial products by annuity salesmen, right?
Yep.
Through 403Bs. It started out as tax-sheltered annuities, and it was primarily the insurance companies that would have salespeople that to the school districts. And if you're a retired school teacher, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, where the guy would, the show young lady would show up with the pizzas or the sandwiches from Subway. And
maybe back in the day, that was kind of what everyone did. But it's a new world today, right? There's a lot of low-cost products besides hikes. And the annuities have gotten even more expensive. So sorry to interrupt, but.
No, that's okay. So what we did is we sat down and contacted each individual insurance company and found out that because of the guarantee riders and just being the annuity products that they were, she was paying from 3.5% to almost 4% on each one of these contracts.
Good Lord.
And she wasn't utilizing the benefit. She didn't need it at all. So we were able on one of the contracts.
It's kind of, when you think about it, so 3.5% to 4%, so she needs to earn 3.5%, 4% on her money to break even. To begin break with, even. Right? Just to break even. But she's got all this. You're buying an annuity. You're buying insurance, right? And you've got a guaranteed minimum income benefit rider attached to that's you're buying insurance.
That she didn't need it.
Yeah, I think your point is how much insurance do you need?
If you're not spending the money and you've got a monthly pension with a cost of living adjustment. But, Pat, why three contracts?
Well, and the reason I think they used the three different contracts was because the person didn't want their broker-dealer to know that they were putting 100% of her assets into annuity contracts. So the way that they were set up, there was 100,000 in one, there was a larger one with about 250,000 in it, and then there was another one with just a small amount, like 50,000 in it. So I think that the advisor actually did that so that there wouldn't have been something from their compliance department or something from the broker-dealer.
Right. For the rest of the listeners, there's regulatory oversight on the use of these products. Because they lack liquidity, they are expensive.
Yeah, and they want to make sure like they don't want, like this.
They don't. They want to the regulators want to make sure that they're not being malused, overused. Like this. And so that's what the first question I asked was, Pat, why three? And that's a great question. It would have never even crossed my mind that they were trying to avoid a compliance issue.
Yeah. And the other thing is that a lot of times these insurance companies will give perks to different advisors that that sell their products. So there might be, you know, some due diligence trips or things that are involved in. If you spread it out over different annuities, you might receive some perks from those as well.
So. From Boondoggle Life Insurance Company.
Exactly. So what we've done is we were able to move one of the contracts into a managed account, one that we're managing for her, and saved her over 2% annually on that, and plus put it in to something that's more suitable. And now what we're doing
is...
There was no surrender charges on one, but the other two still have surrender charges. So what we're doing is she's taking required minimum distributions because she's at that age. So after her RMD comes out, we're able to move an additional amount up to 10% a year to get those dollars out so that she's not charged that 3.5% to 4% on those. And then we've got them marked so that this next year one comes due, and I think the year after that another one comes due, and we're going to move those contracts out into one IRA account instead of having three different ones.
And somewhere where she has some liquidity so she can...
Exactly.
Do you see a lot of this, Pat?
Unfortunately, especially with school teachers, as you mentioned, Pat, I do, and hospital employees, people that are eligible for 403Bs, you run into this quite a bit. With kind of just the average person off the street, you don't see as much, and we're not seeing as much, but I unfortunately with teachers, I still see this quite a bit.
Are you seeing, so just talk about product use in general. Because I've talked to, you know, interact with all the advisors at Hanson McLean as to Scott and yourself. I haven't seen as much of the non-traded REITs, which I think are the most caustic investment products delivered to the general public. Are you seeing any of that in the marketplace right now, or is it
not
down?
Much. Yeah, no, I think that's down quite a bit. I haven't seen a lot of the non-traded REITs in a while, and I think just with the lack of liquidity and the not knowing what the true value is of it on a daily basis has maybe scared off some investors.
That's good.
I'm not seeing that as much, but I still am seeing the annuities, and especially with this one, you know, someone who's paying for an income benefit that they haven't utilized one bit was shocking to me. So
The odds are she's going to leave a good portion of this as an inheritance, right?
Oh, absolutely.
She's now in her 70s and not spending it.
She's only taking her required minimum distribution, so she's not going to spend it down.
Yeah. So maybe the better planning is figuring out what's the long-term strategy with these, not having and paying for insurance for an income rider you don't need.
So, Pat, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And as always, a pleasure working with both Scott and myself. You have.
Yes, I have.
What a pleasure he is.
What a pleasure it is working with us, as you are well aware.
Yeah, thanks. Anyway, thanks, Pat.
You're welcome.
So we have someone like Pat on, and it gives us, you've heard us talk about in this program why we dislike annuities strongly.
Yes.
There's a portfolio manager, Ken Fisher, who does a lot of advertising. You've probably seen Fisher Investments. I'm not saying they're a good firm, bad firm. Not going to put a statement, but he advertised something like, I'd rather go to hell than sell you an annuity or something like that. He's got such a strong statement out there.
And I'm questioning whether that would actually really take place.
If he'd really rather go to hell.
You'd really rather go to hell than sell someone an annuity.
Two options. One, you take advantage of somebody. Two, you spend eternity in hell. Well, your choice.
Yeah. All right. So I'm questioning whether that got through compliance.
But in any case, we can't. The reason why we hate annuities is not because there are never appropriate places for some of them sometimes, because there may be. But you see them misused like this.
Often. And so the thing to remember is the word contract. The problem with these annuities is that they're very, very complex, but they're sold as being simple and easy to understand. They're relatively complex. The problem is that they have a tendency to be very expensive and that they have long obligation periods, which means you put your money in there.
7 years,
8 years, 12 years.
15 years.
What that means is if I pull the money out in the first year, they could charge me as much as 10 or 12% of my deposited amount to pull my own monies out. And the other problem, the big problem, is how your broker got compensated on them.
I think that's his.
They have no interest in the outcome because they get paid up front when the product is installed. The vast majority of the time.
Like some of these equity index annuities, the commissions would be 8, 9, 10%.
So there are rare exceptions. Rare exceptions where annuities may possibly make sense. But the problem is the general public can't tell the difference.
That's right. Now, in full disclosure, Hanson McLean, I don't know, 8% of our assets or so, maybe, are in variable annuities that have guaranteed
minimum benefits.
And frankly, 15 years ago, you can buy you can get these guarantees. The rider would be less than 0.5%.
And no surrender charges, so the client could take the money out the next day if they wanted to.
But they've gotten very expensive products. So I think if you're an individual out there and you're thinking, well, how do I know who to trust? How do I know that I'm not going to be like this retired school teacher?
Stay away from annuities.
Just stay away from annuities, right? By and large, right?
Just stay away from the annuities.
And then you don't have to worry about.
Then you don't have to worry about making the bad choice.
Well, with the Department of Labor rule going into effect, you're not going to see this sort of abuse going on.
That's
anymore.
The hope. The Department of Labor says that the person recommending a investment product to you has to put your interest above their own.
Only for retirement accounts.
Yes.
By the way. So, but if you look for a financial advisor who is a fiduciary, someone who is a fee-based advisor, someone whose compensation is not based upon the product that they recommend to you.
Someone that actually does a needs analysis to understand what your situation is. Because we just talked with Pat Henry and he met with the lady. He realized she was not going to take income off of that and that she was actually should be growing it for her heirs. So he understood her needs in order to make sure that the investment was appropriate for her. So if you meet with someone and they start talking about product immediately, run away. You wouldn't go to a doctor or a dentist that didn't look at you and then just started telling you what would make you better.
Well, it's kind of how doctors work now. They don't have any time. They barely look at you. They look at you, they cough. Here's a prescription.
Really? Not my doctor.
Actually, not my doctor either.
So we hear that about doctors, but I don't believe it.
Actually, I haven't had that bad of an experience with doctors. Yeah, I think about it.
I don't believe it. So the point being is that making a financial decision is important. Go to our website, HansonMcLean.com. We have a video up called Liars, Levies, and Lawsuits. You'll find it under the radio.
Yeah. It's a webinar that talks about how do you know, what are some initial screens to make sure you're working with a qualified advisor?
How are you making sure that you're starting with the best person you can and that you understand that person's background before you even go into the first appointment? That's at HansonMcLean.com.
It's pretty simple to look at a background of an advisor. If you just Google broker check and you enter the person's name. Actually, this week I looked at somebody. I was curious about, I wonder what the background is in this person. I did it myself this week. I Googled broker check. I entered this advisor's name and I entered my zip code. And within a certain amount, they picked up a couple. Oh, there he is.
It's easy. You can see all the complaints, and, yeah, the education.
There's a person in Northern California who promotes himself a great deal through media, talks about being a fiduciary, talks about doing retirement and income analysis and whatnot. And the person was kicked out of the industry for 5 years and had to pay some fines to the regulators.
We just saw one, Scott.
And I'm thinking, if you're an investor, would you really want to work with somebody that got, would you work with an attorney that was disbarred for 5 years? Or would you go to a surgeon that got, lost his medical license or her lost her medical license?
So that's why you want to go to our website, HansonMcLean.com, go under the radio section. And while you're there, sign up for our weekly email as well as subscribe to our podcast.
Yeah. And this music means that we are out of time and we're here every week during this time, the same hour at this station. And you could always catch us here at the station. And of course, as Pat had just mentioned, you can get our podcast, and as more people sign up for our podcast every
20,000 plus people.
I think part of it. We have that video that we put up on. Here's how you download a podcast. So if you're new to it, that's fine. The little video will show you how to get our podcast, and it's a fun, easy thing to do. So anyway, we're out of time. Look forward to being with you next week. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. You've been listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.